The following programming is sponsored by Bishop Mary Enterprises, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Real. Real. Relaxed. Relaxed. But relevant. But relevant. She's an absolute professional with a homegirl feel. Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show with Bishop Mary Foy Palmer, where she will discuss both religious and secular topics with various guests from all walks of life. So thanks for tuning in to the Bishop Mary Show. And now, here's Bishop Mary.
And top of the morning. Good morning, good morning. We are grateful to have you this morning, and we thank you for joining us here live on the Bishop Mary Show in the studios of WWDB. We're going to be talking all things election. We have three great guests that are going to help us as we need to be helped and to get more education. So if you're driving, please be careful. We don't want you to have an accident. And if not, grab a cup of coffee, take some notes. We'll be right back with you after this message.
Hundreds of shooting incidents and multiple victims. Homicides that were senseless, cold, intentional, killing our men, women, and children in the African American communities. The question is, am I my brother or sister's keeper? Have we considered each other as neighbors? We can wait for someone to come in and save us, or we can save ourselves. The violence must end. Do your part.
In need of love today, and that is the song that we are using to introduce to us, of course, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, none other than our own and my sorority brother. Well, I want to say, let me say, not sorority.
But we didn't mean that.
We did not mean that. But he is my frat brother, my constitutionally bound brother in the Greek Nine, none other than our Sigma, our one and only chairman, Mr. Jordan Harris. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
What's up, Soror? Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning, and I'll be headed your way shortly as soon as we finish this, because we have a legislative day in Harrisburg today.
Yeah, busy day.
Blue and white is caking over the Capitol. Watch it.
Yes.
But we're not here to talk about that, Brown, but we're grateful that you joined us. currently, you are, of course, seeking your second seat. You're another term. Let me say that again. I say your second seat because I guess it should be your first seat so you can then share as majority chair of the Appropriations Committee. Yes. But the first thing is he got to get elected. Amen. Mm-hmm. And he's running unopposed. And so we're sure.
Oh, yeah.
That this is going to be a good thing. I don't even think if they write a write-in, they're going to win. But let me not be a predictor of what God has the outcome for.
Yeah.
First, let me express my heartfelt and deepest sympathies to you in the loss of your wife, who was the leading lady of the 186th District. And what a formidable woman. And our prayers continue to be with you, sir.
I appreciate that. Tiffany was a light in my life, and quite honestly, in the lives of the people that she touched. And, you know, I truly miss her every day.
I know that's right. I had a chance to stop by your celebration briefly, and my God, she looked like heaven. Amen. Which meant that she was peacefully loved, and that is always a great thing. Now, shifting to our topic at hand. As the majority chair of appropriations, how important is that for the city of Philadelphia, in particular to those that serve in not only the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus, but cover the Southeast region as well?
Well, listen, it's extremely important. As the appropriations chair, the majority gets to sit at the table when we're discussing the budget. Budget bills, you know, run through my committee. Quite honestly, many of them have my name on it.
All right.
And all bills that go to the Florida House at some point in time have to come through my committee and, you know, kind of get our fingerprints on them. So it's in a very important role to the whole state. But being as though I am a Philadelphian and somebody from the Southeast part of the state, when I go into these discussions, you know, I am thinking about the impact on Philly, impact on the Southeast, and then the impact that it has on the whole state, the impact that it has on Black and brown people, and what we're doing to make sure that we're showing up for Black and brown people in our budget process and in the way that we distribute the Commonwealth's resources. So it's an extremely important role that I'm grateful to have, and grateful for the work that we've done over the last 2 years.
And certainly you want to continue that work. So what are some of your key pieces of legislation that you want to see come into law for us as citizens of Pennsylvania?
Well, you know, one of the big things that we're working on right now has to be mass transit funding. We know that mass transit is extremely important to the connectivity of our Commonwealth. And, you know, in our region, that's SEPTA. But this funding is for the whole state. And the truth is, without mass transit, many people can't get to work. Mm. So, you know, when they can't work, they can't provide for their families, but that also means that they're not paying taxes. Well, mass transit is bringing people to and from our shopping centers and to and from our artistic venues and our restaurants and all of those things. Mass transit makes Pennsylvania move. And therefore, you know, we're working, you know, tremendously hard to try to come to an agreement with the Republican-controlled state Senate so that we can get mass transit funding done in Pennsylvania. Another thing that's extremely important to us mm-hmm. is our continued investment in education funding.
Yes.
And not just an overall, you know, number, but being targeted in how we're sending out those dollars to the school districts that have been underfunded for generations. So, you know, those are just, you know, two things like right now that we're, you know, working on.
Well, you know, first and foremost, I want to say it's great to actually meet you over the phone. But I've seen your work in Philadelphia. I've seen what you do. I noticed that when you're speaking, you're zero tolerance for a lot of foolishness, for lack of better words. You know, as a Black man, an African-American man, you know, what do you see about what's so important for this election? Like, what do you want to tell the African American community? Why is this election so important?
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, because I identify as Black first. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a Democrat, yes, mm-hmm. but I'm a Black Democrat, and sometimes that means different things. And you know, so when I walk into rooms, you know, I bring my Blackness and, mm-hmm. and being Black male I'm with me. So it's the same thing for this election. Listen, I need brothers to understand that, you know, this ain't marriage. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody asking you to marry either one of these candidates. You know, politics is not about marriage. It's about looking at a candidate and seeing who you align with the most. And who do you think will have your best interest at heart? Now, for me, Kamala Harris is the only candidate that's running for president that I can see myself aligning with, who I think has an opportunity to make it to the White House. And, you know, for me, this election is extremely important to our democracy, but it's extremely important to our way of life as brothers. Now, here's the thing. I will submit to you that I understand the frustration that many of our brothers have with regards to politics in general and government in general, and how there are many disenfranchised brothers who feel that their government hasn't wrapped their arms around them enough to feel valued and have a space and a place in this election. So I want to be very clear and direct to them that I understand, see your pain, and I understand the concerns. And it's something that I expressed to the Harris campaign for months. Glad to see last week that the vice president put out a plan specifically for Black men, talking about Black men's mental health, talking about Black men's physical health, talking about Black men's financial health with regards to Black men who want to start businesses, talking about apprenticeships, talking about those things that, you know, many of us talk about in the barbershop. I am still waiting for something from the former president to talk directly to Black men about what his plans are. Listen, the bottom line is this. You know, we have to make sure that our voices are a part of the conversation and that our votes reflect that voice. At the end of the day, there's going to be a president. The question is, will we have a say in who that person is, or will we sit on the sideline and let other people decide for us? I'm going to show up and decide for myself.
And we think that that's the key. Given as what you just stated, you know, as a Black man, you know, African-American man in the city of Philadelphia, what are some of the other efforts that you are you know, helping out the African-American men community to engage in this election? What are some of the things that you're putting in place, and why is it so important?
Yeah, so I'm one of the co-chairs for Kamala Harris in Pennsylvania for the Black males. I work very closely with our chair, who is a council member, Isaiah Thomas. And, you know, look, we're going around talking to brothers in every place and space that they're in, and kind of sharing what the vice president's plan is. But here's the other thing, and I need people to understand this. This election is not just for president. This election is also for United States Senate. This election is for Auditor General. This election is for Attorney General. This election is for Treasurer. This election is for U.S. Congress, State Senate, and State House. And, you know, I am extremely concerned about the presidency, but I'm also extremely concerned about Democrats maintaining the majority in the House across the state. That makes me the majority appropriations chair. That makes me in a position where I can talk about Black wealth, and puts me in a position where when we're discussing the $47.6 billion budget, that I'm asking questions about, well, how much of that is going to people of color? When we talk about contracting, what percentage of these contracts are going to people of color? When we're talking about, you know, building roads and bridges, well, how much of those contracts going to people of color? I can ask these questions, and I can, you know, force people to do certain things and press upon them the importance of it, because we are in the majority. So, you know, this election, you know, is about the top of the ticket, but it's also about all of the people up and down the ballot, because there's an interconnectivity to all of these offices. And I think far too often we think about the election every 4 years, mm-hmm. and not how all of these roles play a part in how Black men are treated, loved, felt, supported in this country, Commonwealth, and in our city.
You know, Chairman Harris, we also recognize that, of course, Black women are emerging quite quickly.
Yes,
in indeed. Leadership role. We have our formidable 100th mayor, who is a Black woman, Mayor Sherelle Parker. We also have, for the first time, our female leader, Speaker McClinton, Joanne McClinton, who is also a Black woman from hails from the southwest portion of the city. And seeing the Black women emerging, there is conversation that our Black men can't support a Black woman. What is your take on that? And maybe not speaking as chair of the appropriations, but as a Black man who came from a Black mama.
Yes.
Well, see, here's the interesting thing. I don't understand where that's coming from. And I think sometimes we got to stop allowing people to put narratives on us. Let me, you know, I voted for Joanna McClinton to be the Speaker of the House of Representatives. I grew up with Joanna McClinton. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I've sat in Joanna McClinton's living room for her high school graduation. Like, that's how far back me and Joe go. That's my sister. Mm-hmm. I've always supported her. I supported her when she first ran for office. We've been supporting each other since we were kids. So I don't know what that means. Sherelle Parker, I voted for her too. Mm. Sherelle and I served together in the House of Representatives, sat on the same row. I used to watch her take pictures of her son Langston to her desk on the Florida House of Representatives. Sherelle called me a couple days ago and asked me to come to a press conference, came to the press conference, stood right next to her. You know what I mean? And then listen, Black men are showing up for Black women every single day of the week. They're showing up for their Black wives. They're showing up for their Black mamas. They're showing up for their Black daughters. So this whole narrative, right, that Black men can't support Black women and can't support Black women leadership is just crazy. Listen, the number one most reliable vote the Democratic Party is the Black woman. You know who's number two? Black men. And not Black men by a small number. 80 to 85% of Black men will vote for a Black woman this election. They will. Here's what I challenge people to do. Talk to my white brothers and sisters about who they voting for. Talk to my white sisters about who they voting for, because their numbers nowhere near where Black men are going to be on election day. We've always, always loved, cherished, protected, and supported our sisters. And here's what we can't do. We can't allow people to create a narrative otherwise. Now, let me also say this. If there are Black men who are disengaged, disenchanted, and disillusioned by the Democratic Party and the democratic process and the American justice system and structure that have oppressed many of them for years, they have a right to be. They have a right to be. This country has not been fair to Black men, hasn't been fair to Black women, hasn't been fair to Black people. So I can't be mad at a brother who looks at a system that has held him back for so long or not giving him the opportunity that he believed he should have been given and get mad at him for feeling some type of way about it. What I do is I look at his pain, his anger. I validate his feelings, but then I tell him why what we're doing will benefit him and his family in the long run. Black men have always supported Black women, and we always will.
I'm grateful that you said that, sir.
We needed to hear that.
Yeah, we need to hear that, because I heard a very powerful message from Bishop J. Lewis Felton at the NAACP Interfaith Peace Breakfast. And he was a little bit more harsher as only he could be as a faith leader, but he pretty much just said, man that is born a woman. And he left it at that.
Wow.
Dropped the mic. I was like, yes, indeed, because we had something to do with it. Mm-hmm. So we got to have these Black men. In conclusion, because I know you have a busy day and you're about to run, what is the quote that you use on a daily basis to help you get up? Because we know you love. You've been serving for a long time in the city as well as now in the state. But when you have those moments of angst, those moments of, I don't know what else to do, or I'm frustrated because I want to do something, but I can't, and I may want to throw my hands up. What is that quote that helps you to realize that you are where you are and to be empowered to continue to serve?
It's very simple. It's the motto of the state of South Carolina, where many of my family members live. It's real simple. It says, while I breathe, I hope. Mm. While I breathe, I hope. Mm. And that's really what keeps me going every single day. As long as I have breath in my body, I can hope for better. As long as I have breath in my body, I could work and put in the effort to make this country more fair, to make our justice system more fair, to make our economic system more fair, to make our healthcare system more fair. While I breathe, I hope. So for me, as long as I have breath in my body, as long as I have the opportunity to do, I will continue to not just be hopeful, but put hope into action. And that's what I'm going to do when I walk across the street today and leave my apartment and walk to the beautiful state capitol here in Pennsylvania to move legislation to hopefully better the lives of people in this commonwealth. So while I breathe, I hope.
Well, I'm so grateful. I love that. That sounds like South Carolina.
What I mean, all right. We appreciate
thank you so much. We appreciate you coming on the show this morning. Thank you so much for gracing us with your wisdom and your presence. And for those of you who don't know, I'm happy to present to us here again on the Bishop Mary Show, the state representative, honored to serve the 186th Legislative District of this state, Pennsylvania, the Honorable, mm-hmm. come on somebody, the Honorable
the
Jordan
Honorable
Harris.
Jordan Harris.
Amen. Who just got another Harris compliment, so they were making that point clear.
Absolutely.
Don't forget, J come before M. No problem. Amen. And he is also chair of our Appropriations Committee. Thank you so much for your time today. Be safe, and I hope to see you real soon.
These two.
All right. And we're going to be moving right into our next interview, coming up with Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon.
They let you dream just to watch them shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's going to turn and it's all going to roll.
Right.
Nothing like that. 9 to 5.
That's right.
Amen by Dolly Parton.
I love her. I absolutely love
now,
her.
Now, real women and men don't work just 9 to 5. And we have on with us one of those persons who is
working overtime. Working overtime.
Because it's 8:23.
That's right.
So it's before 9 a.m. We are happy to have with us here on the Bishop Mary Show, live with us today, U.S. Congresswoman, the Honorable Mary Gay Scanlon, who represents the 5th District of the beautiful state of Pennsylvania. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So pleased to be here, even if it's before 9.
Because well, you work hard. You work hard. We know this.
Absolutely. Would you mind just giving a brief elevator pitch of who you are and why you want to be reelected?
Sure thing. So, Mary Gay Scanlon, since 2018, 2019, I guess, when we were sworn in, I've represented Pennsylvania's 5th District, which is part of Philadelphia. So it's South and Southwest Philadelphia, the port, the airport, the shipyard, the Navy Yard, all of the sports stadiums, then all of Delaware County. you know, Southwest Philly and then into Darby, Yaden, that area, and then a chunk of Montgomery County as well. So of the three folks who represent Philadelphia in Congress, I'm the only one who also represents the counties. And I take that as kind of a mission to make sure that we're working on our regional economy and that when we bring jobs to the Philadelphia area, whether it's in the counties or the city, that we're making sure that our people who live here get first crack at them, that we have programs with the community colleges and apprenticeships and such that give people the skills they need to take those jobs. Mm. So that's one piece of it, trying to work on economic issues in our region. Before coming to Congress, I spent 35 years as a public interest lawyer in Philadelphia and then gradually working with folks across the country on issues about access to justice and making sure that everyone had opportunity. So I was at the Education Law Center for a decade. That's the group that sued the state of Pennsylvania to make sure that every kid was getting a properly funded education. And that's something that's obviously ongoing, but it's step after step. Worked on issues of gun violence and trying to make sure that, you know, we're getting guns off the street, but also we're supporting those community programs that help us reduce gun violence. Working on immigration, working on issues of election protection and voting rights. So all these issues that were part of my day job, not just 9 to 5. I ended up after Mr. Trump's first election feeling like I needed to do more. And that's why I ran for Congress, needing to be a check and balance and uphold our system of government, but also pushing back on the real threats to public safety and to individuals across our country who are being targeted by the Trump administration.
And you came in right before the pandemic hit, so I'm certain that your job was very intense, especially with the distancing, probably more virtual sessions and all of that. And thankfully, you survived, and you're still representing us, so we're grateful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I have a question for you. What are your three top agendas if and when reelected?
So my top agenda has always been protecting our system of government, elections, voting rights. That's something that I worked on for decades. I was an election judge in Philly. I was a poll worker protector. I participated in class actions around the country, including Pennsylvania, to make sure that we didn't have these strict voter ID laws that are so strict they prevent eligible voters from voting. And we saw that here in Pennsylvania, participated in cases involving gerrymandering. So really a foundational issue of can Americans' voices be heard at the ballot box? So that remains number one, sort of the good essence of good government that motivates me to run again and stay in this fight. As I said, making sure that everybody in our region has access to opportunity through good education. Hunger is part of that. You know, Philadelphia being the poorest of our large cities, done a lot of work around access to food and making sure that people have the ability to get the food they need. So working on SNAP and WIC and working with Philabundance and our regional organizations and even individual church food pantries, because obviously that's another foundational issue. So economic issues, et cetera, and gun safety. I mean, Philadelphia has been hit with gun violence in ways that a lot of places haven't been, although we saw a huge rise across the country. That's always been an issue. And in fact, probably the first political issue that drove me into political action was it was after the Columbine shooting, and I helped organize neighbors and got a couple buses of people to the Million Mom March. But obviously, the gun issue is so much bigger than these mass shootings, and particularly in our region, where we see the equivalent of a mass shooting on many summer weekends. So doing what we can to drive funds to the community organizations, which research shows us is so important to reducing the conditions that make people think picking up a gun is the solution when it's not.
I'm grateful that you said that, because of course gun violence affects all of us, and any one of us that have been a victim of any type of violence gives us a very different view of how things are. I think I recall that there was something that happened with you that was unexpected. And it was well publicized, and we're grateful that you weathered that storm and all is well. But I guess it does give you a different perspective. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I mean, it was interesting when that happened. So I did have my car stolen at gunpoint in FDR Park in 2021, just before Christmas. I'd been down there to do a tour with city folks to see their plans for renovation of the park. And it was three young men. They were 15, 17, and 19 who held me up at gunpoint and took my car keys and my car and whatever. But it didn't really change my perspective. It did reinforce it, that there are too many damn guns on the street, and we need to do things like make sure we're enforcing background checks and interrupting gun trafficking, and now really going after these ghost guns and such.
Oh, yeah.
But also, what was causing three young men right at the start of their lives to think this was a good idea? So reinforcing the idea that there is a role for law enforcement and such, but especially targeting keeping the guns off the streets, but then also making sure that folks in our communities have opportunities and don't turn to this either for a joyride kind of a thing or for thinking that it's the best option.
I have another question for you, Congresswoman. Why is voting so necessary?
Yeah, especially now.
Yeah.
Well, it's the way that we have as Americans to run our government. I mean, what is the option to democracy? We see it around the world. It's terrible to have dictators and, you know, a small group of people running things. Democracy is the way we express our voices and say what we want. And in the short time that I've been in Congress and been in politics, which is really only the last 6 years, I've seen where that impact happens. So when I came into Congress in 2018, we had a gun safety majority in the House of Representatives for the first time in decades. And that was because young people organized the March for Our Lives, and they registered voters and they got those voters out. So we were able to pass through the House background checks and closing the boyfriend loophole and a whole series of measures to address the gun violence crisis. Now, we weren't able to get it through the Senate because of the filibuster, but that's another story. But even over that time period, we've seen the American public has moved on gun violence. And the Senate has not yet followed, but we can, by electing officials, we can make progress there, because we did get a bipartisan gun safety bill through 2 years ago. And we've seen that start to make a difference. So It makes a difference there. Here in Pennsylvania, we see it every election. We were able to flip the state house so that we no longer have an all-Republican legislature in 2022. And that flip was only by one seat. And that one seat was decided by 64 votes.
Wow.
So, and that made the difference between having a statewide abortion ban and having a statewide strict voter ID law, which we know from the 2012 law that we had in Pennsylvania. When you have a too strict voter ID law, and everybody has voter ID, but if you choose certain forms of identification, you're choosing who the voters are. So if you see that people with a gun license can vote, but not people with a student ID, you're choosing your voters.
Yeah.
That's I hadn't heard that before, but that's a fabulous way to say if you're choosing people with a student ID versus, come on, somebody.
That we
it makes you wonder. You are in the Congress.
Sure.
And, of course, many of us recall January 6th. A horrific time. Would you briefly just share that moment and what it meant to you?
It was wild, and at the at the time, so on January 6th itself, you know, we were still at the height of COVID. And the vaccines had just come out. I actually was scheduled to get my first shot on January 7th at 10 a.m.
Wow.
So we were still in a position where we were socially distancing. And so that day started with my Pennsylvania colleagues and I meeting to prepare. We knew Pennsylvania's ballots were going to be challenged because the former president had been attacking Pennsylvania's election since before the election. You know, Pennsylvania had just, actually the Republican legislature had just adopted universal mail-in voting to make it easier for people to vote. But the president, I think, knew that his support in Pennsylvania was slipping. So he started attacking Pennsylvania's mail-in ballots. And so the Pennsylvania contingent, we met virtually over Zoom to plan out how we were going to defend in the debate Pennsylvania's votes. And of course, this was only the Democrats because the Republican members voted against our ballots. And this was, so you're asking what I was feeling on that day? I was really mad because our Republican colleagues in the Pennsylvania delegation had been sworn into office on January 3rd. Based on the very same ballots that they were challenging on January 6th.
Wow.
So there was that element. And so we were preparing for debate. And quite frankly, in the Capitol and in our offices next to the Capitol, we were really unaware of how crazy it was outside. The first notice that most of us, including myself, had was I was watching television. I was watching the debate on the House floor when all of a sudden they pulled the speaker and all the high-ranking officials off the dais, and then all of a sudden they shut things down. So that's at the point that I started getting, you know, texts and messages from family and friends. Actually, I was on a group chat. I have a congressional youth cabinet for high school students interested in public policy, and they started sending me clips of what they were seeing on Twitter and other places of what was going on. So we started getting notices that buildings around the Capitol were being evacuated. I was in my office across the street there by myself because of COVID. We didn't have the staff coming in. And because of the unrest that we anticipated outside, I had told my staff not to try to come in because it was going to be crazy outside. We never anticipated that people would actually break into the Capitol. So I had my first lockdown. I'd never had one before, but I have a friend who's a school teacher, and she was coaching me through what you do on a lockdown.
Wow.
So that's what I did. And we waited as the National Guard cleared things. I mean, we were hours. We were all barricaded in safe places until about 8 o'clock. They finally cleared the complex. And in that, it was, we have a job to do here. We have to finish this certification of the election. So then that was the focus, that we have a job. We have to preserve our country and our democracy. So I think the Pennsylvania debate occurred about 1 o'clock that morning.
Absolutely.
There was almost a fist fight between a couple people because our Republican colleagues were trying to blame the assault on Antifa, which A, wasn't a thing, and B, that's not who broke into the Capitol. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, we certified the election and then had to make our way home. So obviously the most dramatic thing any of us have ever been through, probably one of the most dramatic things our country has been through. And we're still reckoning with the consequences in large part because the former president has continued to promote an absolute lie about the results of that election and what should happen as a result.
I want to tell you that I sat up from the time the debate reconvened and watched until the conclusion. And I was no more proud, not only of the Pennsylvania delegation and both the House and the Senate, but I was thrilled to death to see that despite something that was intentional, it did not stop the force of you guys doing your job. And so I want to thank you personally for continuing to do what you were called to do, and that is to serve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
no, go ahead.
I appreciate that. But I mean, there were so many people. I mean, one of the things that just breaks my heart every time is our Capitol police officers.
Yes.
Who were just battered throughout that. I mean, we just heard this week of another officer who was there that day taking their lives. Mm. And I mean, the physical assault they endured that day and the enduring mental trauma that they've experienced. I looked for weeks for the one young man who I used to see every morning on my way to votes. He got stationed elsewhere for a while, so I was terrified that something had happened to him. But I'm, you know, I am and was friends with many of the people who were so grievously injured that day. Mm. And so it's people, Americans doing their duty, you know, from the Capitol police officers to the folks who work in the Capitol and had to repair everything that got broken and clean things up so we could re-enter the chamber. And it takes all of us to keep our democracy. And that's really important. And step one in that is voting.
Yes.
Congresswoman, I am so glad that you are in position to do some great things. In 30 seconds, could you tell us what would you want to say to the American people as your final remarks are about, you know, voting?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it goes, we're from Philadelphia. We're from the place where our democracy began 248 years ago. We have the responsibility in this battleground year where the eyes of the nation and the world are upon us to show that we're going to continue that legacy, that we're going to celebrate the 250th anniversary of our country in 2 years by showing that our democracy is strong and that it's strong because we vote and we vote to protect everyone's rights. So that's where I would go.
I'm so glad you said that. And we're so grateful to have you on the show. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. And feel free at any time to reach out if you just want to come and update us. And we certainly hope that you'll accept our invitation again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I would love to. We'll be in touch. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
You're welcome. Make it a great day.
Have a great day. That was our U.S. Congresswoman of the 5th District, U.S. Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, who is, of course, serving us violently and valiantly in her seat with us. Right now, we're going to turn to our sports talk, Terry, who's going to give us our update on all things Philly sports. In fact, she covers the stadiums and all the sports teams.
Yes.
All right, go ahead, sports talk.
All right, good morning, good morning. So, with all attention on Nick Sirianni's antics last week against a lackluster game against the Cleveland Browns, what is the best thing to get you right? A game against the New York Football Giants, and the Eagles came out and dominated in Saquon's return to MetLife Field as he ran to the tune of 17 carries for 176 yards and a touchdown. Jalen Hurts, another turnover-free game, which seems to be a formula for success for this team, 10 for 14, 114 yards. A.J. Brown leading the receiving core with 5 catches, 89 yards, and a touchdown. But the big story was the defense. Malik Nabers, the highly touted wide receiver out of LSU there, held to just 4 catches on 41 yards by superstar stud rookie D-back Quinyon Mitchell. And also Bryce Huff, who's been highly criticized of his play through the first part of this season in his contract 3-year deal, got his first sack as an Eagle yesterday as the defense put up 8 sacks. And held the Giants to just 3 points. So dominating performance, winning the game 28-3. Next up, the Cincinnati Bengals, much tougher test. And that game will be next Sunday in Cincinnati. So definitely not going to have the same kind of opponent. But if they keep playing the way that they're playing, should be able to have a very, very exciting game there against the Bengals, who are also trying to turn their season around. Also, the Philadelphia Flyers season is underway. And so far, while the wins don't show it, Matt Cave Michkov is the real deal. This kid has 6 total points between points and assists through the first 5 games and looks like the best player on the ice, a key cornerstone piece of the franchise and someone that they're going to be looking to build around for years to come. And lastly, in total sports news, the World Series is set as the LA Dodgers sent home the New York Mets. So, man, New York had a rough day yesterday. As they sent them home in blowout fashion and are now going to face the New York Yankees. And that series is set to take off on Friday in L.A. Make sure you guys follow me on all social media platforms at Sports Talk Terry. And we will be back next Monday to give you all your updates right here on the Bishop Mary Show.
Thanks a lot, Sports Talk Terry. We appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And we're getting ready for our interview with Congressman Stephen Horsford. Please, right after this message starts.
I look at my life and I still can't believe it. How did I make it to where I stand now? You don't understand, I was up against the whole world. And all I could feel was it breaking me down. But out of a hopeless situation.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning here on the Bishop Mary Show. We're excited to have Congressman Stephen Horsford with us, who we are elated that he has joined us to bring us up to date on black male engagement, particularly in this upcoming election. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you, Bishop Mary. It's great to be on your show.
Fabulous. So would you just give a elevator pitch of who you are, who do you serve?
Well, I am Congressman Stephen Horsford. I'm proud to represent Nevada's 4th Congressional District out of Las Vegas and to serve as chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, as well as national co-chair for the Harris-Walz campaign. We are excited about the next 3 weeks, 22 days
yes,
left in this election to make sure that we reach every single vote, that we earn every single vote, and that we turn out every single vote, because so much is on the line in this upcoming election.
So all the way out there in Las Vegas, I have several friends out there. I'm going to have to come out there and see you in your state. And certainly if you come to Philadelphia, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. In particular, as the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, what is it that you feel is paramount for us to know, mm-hmm. and paramount for us to do?
Well, first and foremost, we have one objective between now and November 5th, and that is to win. Not just to win the next election, as important as that is, to elect Kamala Harris as our 47th president, but to win for the people. And that is why I'm so excited that the vice president and Tim Walz have outlined their priorities for a Black men's agenda, one that centers the voices of Black men. It's time out, quite frankly, that we talk about Black men and talk down to Black men. We really need to listen to Black men. Our perspective, our point of view. We do have a political perspective, and we are among the most dedicated group of voters, second only to Black women. Give it out. Okay. Give it up to Black women.
Best give it up.
But it also means that people who are running for office should be accountable to our vote, since we are such a dedicated group of voters that decide every election. And that is why I'm so pleased that Kamala Harris has outlined her specific blueprint for how she will uplift Black men and the Black community in her administration when she's elected.
I'm certain that that's going to be the case. I've talked to quite a few Black men who have said to me that they feel that there was not enough concentration on their gifts and talents that could come to help in the political arena. And so they're registered, but they're not voting, or they've been courted very well by the other party, the Republican Party. What could you say to those that may be listening that will help them to look at the situation holistically? Certainly not telling them who to vote for, but the power of their voice needs to be heard, particularly with their vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with Black men, as a Black man myself, that, you know, we have a point of view that is about uplifting ourselves, our children, our family, our communities. and that we want to know where these candidates stand when it comes to us. And the thing is we want the same thing as anybody else. We want the opportunities to get ahead. That is why the vice president's agenda around Black men is around wealth, health, and economic prosperity. She has outlined a proposal that, when enacted in the first 4 years of her term, would help 1 million small business owners, entrepreneurs, get access to $20,000 of forgivable loans, which means loans you don't have to pay back to help start your business. We have a lot of young, particularly young Black men, who have a lot of great ideas about starting a business. This would help them do that, but not only to start the business, but to make sure that the business thrives. She also proposes $50,000 of tax deductions for those businesses, so that once you start, you can actually grow your business and make sure that it continues to be successful. She's focusing on 1 million Black homeowners in America by providing a $25,000 grant for down payment assistance. This would, again, help 1 million Black homeowners achieve the American dream of homeownership, which is how we build wealth through equity and generational wealth that we can pass down to our families. She's proposing a child tax credit of up to $6,000 for families with children, particularly under 6 years old, that would move Black children in those families out of poverty and into the middle class. This is centering Black men and the Black community in her opportunity economy, which I think is exactly what is needed to make sure that Black men see ourselves in the agenda of her administration when elected.
I'm glad that you took the time to explain the health, wealth, and economic opportunity. As a volunteer instructor in the prison system, the state system here, and I have been at SCI Chester since it opened in April 1998, all of them are male incarcerated persons. And when I listen to them, they're concerned about not only that, about reentering society and having the same opportunities, but they are also concerned about the injustice that comes with criminal justice reform, and as well as the opportunity to reenter society after they've served so many years that proves that they may have changed from the person they are. I heard the vice president make reference to that. Is this something that could also be a part of the agenda, not only with her, but through the Congressional Black Caucus?
Absolutely. Part of what she is proposing, for example, is to legalize marijuana, because we have seen the disparate impact of the treatment and the incarceration of Black men due to the possession of or use of marijuana. She's already done that on a federal level, but this is something that we need to do on the state level. I want to commend Governor Wes Moore and other governors, including your governor in Pennsylvania, for making this a priority, right? To change the laws so that we can take away the barriers that have created that have prevented us from achieving full economic participation. On the other side, we have someone who wants to make it more punitive for those who have been involved in the criminal justice system. And that is why we have a clear choice between Kamala Harris, who wants to move us forward, and Donald Trump, who's trying to take us backward.
Well, you know, we can't go back. And when we fight, we win. And I love those phraseologies, because that's always been a part of our heritage. Come on. You know, African-Americans, we never lay down. We may drop, we may even fall down, but we always get back up. And in conclusion, recognizing that you have a short time, what is it that you feel that holistically the Congressional Black Caucus, particularly with Black male engagement, will continue to do, not just for this election, but the ones in Pennsylvania, we have one every 6 months,
but other states that are pivotal to this election to ensure that we continue the agenda that we are hearing will be set forth from Vice President Harris?
We need to close the racial wealth gap in this country. The average white wealth is on average about $284,000, and the average Black net worth is about $44,000. That's a 6-to-1 difference.
Sure is.
We know that this is because of systemic racism and discrimination, from slavery to Jim Crow to the mass incarceration of Black people even today. And so we need systemic change at every level, local, state, federal. And it's why it is important for us to elect the right people to office who share our values, and then to hold those elected officials accountable to us. Yes, we are among the most dedicated group of voters, both Black women and Black men, but we also need to hold elected officials accountable to an agenda that actually addresses the systemic change that we want to see, one that breaks down the economic barriers that have prevented our success, and also to understand those who are standing in the way. At the very time that Kamala Harris is working to expand opportunity for entrepreneurs or for those through home ownership, on the other side, there are people who are trying to take away the tools of opportunity for us to succeed. Today in America, only 1% of Black men are teachers in our public school system. 1%. Now that hurts everybody. It hurts Black children, white, Latino, Asian, everybody. Because if they can't see us as leaders in the classroom, then they especially can't see us as leaders in the boardroom. And that is why we have to change the overall paradigm and to make sure that Black people and Black men and women are centered in the policy that we're seeking to advance. That is why Kamala Harris has listened. She didn't just start this. She didn't just announce this agenda. She's been listening to people. In fact, she came out to Philly. I participated in one of the economic opportunity tours that she had there because she wanted to hear directly from Black men about what it is they wanted to see in the policy. And now she is acting on that by proposing this agenda. But we've got to make sure that we turn out, that our votes are heard. We can vote early right now, and to make sure that we vote in numbers that demonstrate that this is the agenda that we want to see in the first 100 days of a Harris-Walz administration.
I wanted to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate what you have shared. And certainly we know that everyone is hop, skipping and jumping, trying to take care of these past 22, well, next 22 days toward the road of victory, which is our hope. If you could close with giving us one, your favorite quote that gets you up every day and keeps you in the service mode to those who you love to serve, because I'm assuming you love doing the service as a congressman to those who you are representing.
Well, a quote that drives me is, in order to serve the people, you have to love the people. And I know the Vice President Kamala Harris loves the people. She has put the people at the center of her work, her entire career, whether as Vice President, as a United States Senator, as Attorney General. It has always been to advance the needs, the aspirations, the goals of the people. And that is one of the reasons that I am such a strong supporter, because I understand, you know, the difference between her and her opponent, that is really about himself and putting the interest of himself above everything else. And so let's get out. Let's show people how we win through our vote. The vote is the most powerful action, most powerful nonviolent action we can demonstrate in this democracy. And Black men, we do have a perspective. Don't let anybody tell us any different. This is our chance to be heard at the ballot box and then to hold those accountable to do the things that they promised on behalf of our communities. Let's get out there and vote, everybody.
Vote, vote, vote. We thank you so much, Congressman. I certainly do hope that if you ever come to Philadelphia or there's another opportunity, I certainly would love to meet you in person. And I appreciate your time so much. And please have a good, safe, and rest of the day.
Thank you, Bishop Mary.
Well, y'all, that's going to do it for me today.
Yeah, that's it.
Come on. We're right on the minute.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks again, Brother Marcus, for being here. I love you much. And remember my motto, if you can't be good, be careful. And baby, if you can't be careful, then don't do it. It may not be worth it. Hey.
Have a great day.
Until next week, take care.
Thanks for tuning in to another dynamic show with Bishop Mary. To contact Bishop Mary, call 833-722-4748. That's 833-722-4748. And she'll get right back to you. Remember, let the healing begin with you. See you next week for another great time together on the Bishop Mary Show.